Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're going to be looking at 8th century Israel.
Ooh.
It's going to be a fascinating one because, we're going to be looking at a society where people were super religious, but get this, God, like, hated their worship.
Yeah.
So we're going to be talking about, why that was.
Right.
And we're going to be using Dr. Gary Yates' lecture on the Book of Amos
Oh,
as our guide.
okay.
And believe me, you're going to want to hear this.
Yeah, I'm excited.
This is going to be a good one,
Yeah.
right? So imagine, spending all the time on your faith, right? You're doing all the things you're supposed to be doing,
Yeah.
and then God's like, "Yep, hate it."
Like what?
Yeah, it's all wrong.
Wow.
So that's what we're going to unpack today.
Yeah, that's a fascinating paradox for
It
sure.
is.
And what's really striking to me is that it's not just ancient history.
You're right.
I mean, this tension between, outward religious practice and genuine faith. I mean, we see that all the time, even today.
Oh, absolutely. And Dr. Yates really highlighted Amos 5:21-24 for me.
Okay.
And this is where God says, "I hate, I despise your feasts. I take
Wow.
no delight in your solemn assemblies.
Strong
Yeah,
words.
even though you offer me burnt offerings and grain
Ah.
offerings, I will not listen."
So, like, they're doing all the
They're
things,
doing all the
and
things.
it's not the right heart behind it.
Exactly. And that's what's so interesting. It's like,
Yeah.
what were they doing wrong?
Yeah, like, how do you get to that point where you're so invested but so off track? It's wild.
Okay, so it's clearly more than just like going through the motions, right? There's
Right.
something much deeper going on here.
Yeah.
What was like the root of the problem?
Well, to understand that, we need to like rewind a bit
Okay.
and look at the historical
All
context.
right.
So, Dr. Yates explains that the trouble started way back with King Jeroboam.
Okay.
Now, he was the first king of the Northern Kingdom of Israel, and he wanted to secure his power.
Okay.
So, what does he do?
I don't know.
He creates his own religious system,
Oh, wow.
sets up these alternative worship centers at Dan and Bethel, and get this to top it all off.
Yeah.
He puts golden calves in both places to represent.
Golden calves. Where have we heard that before?
Right. It's like a direct echo of the story of Aaron and the golden calf in Exodus. It's this classic example of humanity trying to, create a god in their own image,
Okay.
trying to control the divine.
Interesting.
We see this pattern pop up again and again throughout history and even in our own lives.
Right?
I think about those golden calves in your own life.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah. Are there things you prioritize above God? Things you put more importance on than justice and kindness?
Yeah, good point.
It's a tough question,
Yeah.
but an important one.
Yeah, it's so easy to get caught up in, our own agendas,
Yeah,
our own desire, that
exactly.
we totally lose sight of what really matters.
Yeah, and to make things worse, Jeroboam didn't stop there.
Oh
He
no.
appointed priests who weren't from the tribe of Levi,
Okay.
the tribe that was specifically designated for priestly duties.
Right.
And he instituted his own unsanctioned holy days.
Really?
Yeah, so basically he was just like disregarding God's instructions.
Wow.
And it set this precedent for flawed worship that continued for generations.
Wow. So if I'm getting this right,
Okay.
it's not just that they were worshiping in like the wrong places
Right.
or with like the wrong symbols. It's more about like the motivation behind it all. This like
Exactly. Like,
desire to control and manipulate God for their own purposes.
that's a great way to put it.
Okay.
They were missing the heart of true worship, the surrender, the humility, the recognition that, like, we are not in control.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
And we can't forget about like King Ahab and Queen Jezebel,
Oh,
right?
yeah, definitely.
They definitely added their own twist to this whole religious mix.
Dr. Yates mentions how they introduced the worship of Baal, a Canaanite god,
Okay.
and they blended it with the worship of Yahweh.
They were like mixing and matching.
Right, called syncretism. It's like
Yeah.
imagine mixing different religious ideas together, like ingredients in a recipe.
Oh, okay.
So in Israel at that time, you had a bit of Yahweh worship,
Right.
a dash of Baal,
Okay.
a sprinkle of other traditions all mixed together.
It sounds like a very interesting blend.
It was a melting pot of religious ideas.
Yeah.
And by the time Amos came along, this kind of religious blending was widespread.
So it sounds like there was a lot going on.
Yeah, a lot of layers to
They had the
unpack.
wrong symbols, the wrong motives, and a whole mishmash of religious ideas.
Right.
But if I'm understanding Dr. Yates correctly,
Yeah.
that wasn't like the core issue God was addressing in Amos 5.
You're catching on quickly.
Oh.
Yeah, it goes even deeper than that.
Really?
The real issue God had wasn't just the form of their worship. Or even like the blending of different gods.
Right.
But the massive disconnect between their outward piety and their unjust actions.
Okay.
So they were meticulously observing all these rituals.
Right.
But their everyday lives were filled with greed, oppression, social injustice.
Wow.
They were talking the talk, but not walking the walk.
It's like posting about social justice online, but never actually like doing anything to help those in need.
Exactly.
You know, talking the talk, not walking the walk.
Right.
That's a very modern example.
Yeah, and it's something we all need to be mindful of.
Okay, so they had like compartmentalized their faith.
Yeah, they had separated it from their actions.
And that was the problem.
That was the core issue.
Okay.
And Dr. Yates makes it very clear that this wasn't just an issue for the ancient Israelites.
Right.
It's a problem that still plagues us today.
Oh, for sure.
How often do we go through the motions of faith without letting it truly impact how we treat others?
That's a tough question.
It is.
It's so easy to get caught up in the outward appearance of faith.
Right.
Without letting it like change our hearts and our actions.
Exactly.
So is that what was like infuriating God?
Yeah, I think so.
This hypocrisy, this gap between their religious practice and their ethical living.
Yes. And you know, this idea that God is angered by empty religious practice,
mm-hmm.
that wasn't new.
Oh, okay.
Dr. Yates brings up Isaiah 1.10-15.
Okay.
Where God condemns these meaningless sacrifices from those with hands full of blood.
Wow.
It's as if their sacrifices are completely tainted by their actions.
Mm-hmm.
They're putting on this outward show of piety.
Right.
But inwardly, there's this massive disconnect.
It's like they believe that going through the motions can somehow make up for their lack of genuine righteousness.
Yeah, it's this dangerous idea that we can somehow manipulate God.
Right.
That we can earn his favor through outward actions, even if our hearts are far from him.
Okay.
And it's not just Isaiah.
Okay.
Dr. Yates points to Jeremiah 7.21-26 as well.
Okay.
And here, God clearly states that he prioritizes obedience over ritual.
Okay, so it's not about just like doing the right thing.
Right, it's about the heart behind the actions.
So true worship isn't about checking off boxes.
Mm.
It's about aligning our lives with God's will.
Absolutely.
And showing it in how we treat others.
And this highlights something unique about the Israelite covenant with God.
Okay.
There's this deep ethical dimension woven into it.
Interesting.
It's not just about following rules or performing rituals.
Right.
It's about how that faith translates into ethical behavior, how it shapes how we treat others.
Okay, so Isaiah and Jeremiah aren't the only ones, right?
Nope.
Were there other prophets who had like similar messages?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Dr. Yates also highlights Micah 6.18.
Okay.
And in this passage, Micah cuts right to the heart of the morning and asks, "What does the Lord require of you?"
What a powerful question.
And the answer is, not elaborate sacrifices or fancy offerings.
Okay.
It's simple, really.
Yeah.
Justice, kindness, and walking humbly with God.
Wow.
These are the things that matter, not just in ancient Israel, but in your life, too.
That passage is so powerful because it applies to all of us, regardless of our background or our beliefs.
Right.
It's a reminder that true faith is universal. It transcends cultures and time periods.
It's a timeless message.
Yeah, but how did Amos get this message across to the Israelites?
That's a great question.
I mean, these were people who were like comfortable with their rituals,
yeah,
with their view of God.
Right.
How do you like shake them out of that complacency?
Well, Dr. Yates points out that Amos didn't just like talk about the problem.
Okay.
He used some pretty powerful imagery to drive home the futility of their empty rituals.
Okay.
So for example, in Amos 4.4-5,
yeah,
he sarcastically tells the people to multiply transgression at Bethel and Bilgal.
Okay.
Those very places they considered sacred.
Wow.
It's like he's saying, go ahead, keep piling on the sacrifices.
Right.
But without a change in behavior, it's all meaningless.
You can almost hear the sarcasm dripping from his words, can't you?
Oh, yeah.
It's this stark reminder that God can't be manipulated or appeased by empty gestures.
It's about the heart, not the outward show.
I'm starting to understand why God was so angry.
Yeah.
They were completely missing the point.
Exactly. And in Amos 5.5-6,
okay,
he draws this contrast between seeking God,
mm-hmm,
and seeking specific sanctuaries,
okay,
foreshadowing the destruction of those very places they viewed as sacred.
So the very places they thought would provide safety and security would ultimately be the targets of God's judgment.
Exactly. It's a powerful image, isn't it?
It is.
Imagine thinking that a physical location will protect you from God's judgment,
right,
when you're living in direct opposition to his will.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Did Amos have any other like clever ways of getting his point across?
Well, Dr. Yates points out this chilling wordplay in Amos 5.5,
okay,
that I think you'll find interesting.
Oh, okay.
So the name Gilgal,
mm-hmm,
which was one of their sacred cities,
okay,
is woken into the word for go into exile.
Really?
It's subtle, but it's as if the very name of their sacred city foreshadows its fate.
Wow, that's a really thought-provoking connection.
Yeah.
I'm starting to see how these seemingly insignificant details
right.
were actually foreshadowing a much bigger event.
Exactly. And this just highlights that Amos wasn't trying to abolish rituals entirely.
Okay.
He was trying to help them see the bigger picture.
To understand that rituals have a place.
Right.
But they're not like the end-all be-all of faith.
Exactly.
So his goal was to correct their understanding of God.
Yeah.
To help them see that he's not some distant passive observer
mm-hmm.
that you can just appease with sacrifices.
Right.
He's intimately involved in our lives.
Absolutely.
He sees our action.
And he cares about how we treat others.
Okay.
And to really drive this point home, Amos uses two incredibly powerful metaphors to depict God.
Okay, what are they?
A roaring lion and a thundering storm.
Okay, that sounds intense. I don't think I'd be feeling very complacent if I hit a lion roaring in my ear or a storm brewing overhead.
Right.
It definitely gets your attention.
Exactly. Those metaphors were meant to challenge their comfortable complacency,
okay.
to shake them out of their routines.
And force them to wake up to the reality of God's power.
And their own vulnerability.
Okay.
Yeah.
I love how Dr. Yates explains that Amos preached these warnings 2 years before a massive earthquake hit the region.
Oh, wow.
Imagine hearing those words. Seeing those images.
Yeah.
And then actually experiencing the destruction Amos foretold.
It must have sent chills down their spines.
Yeah. And I bet they made the connection too.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
It must have been absolutely terrifying.
Right.
But it also would have been hard not to see it as a direct confirmation of Amos's prophetic message.
Right.
This wasn't just abstract theology.
Right.
It was a powerful, visceral encounter with the reality of God's power.
It's a reminder that our actions have consequences,
mm-hmm.
that ignoring God's call to justice and righteousness
right.
doesn't go unnoticed or unpunished.
And it's not just ancient history either.
Right.
Those lions and storms can take many forms in our lives today.
Yeah, for sure.
They might be a global pandemic
right.
that exposes the inequalities in our society,
mm-hmm.
or a personal crisis that forces you to confront your own mortality
right.
and the fragility of your plans,
okay.
or even a social movement uh-huh. that challenges your deeply held assumptions and biases.
Wow.
These lions and storms, mm-hmm. they can be unsettling, even terrifying,
right.
but they can also be opportunities for growth.
Okay.
To transformation.
For a deeper understanding of ourselves and our place in the world.
Exactly.
So it's about listening for that roar.
Mm-hmm.
Paying attention to those rumbles.
Yeah.
That might be warning signs.
Right.
Urging us to reevaluate our priorities, our choices, our acts.
It's about waking up and paying attention.
But how do we apply these ancient metaphors to our own lives?
That's the question, isn't it?
It is.
What lions or storms might shake us out of our complacency today?
We'll dive into those questions next.
Sounds good, yeah.
You know, it's so easy to fall into that trap of thinking we've got it all figured out.
Right.
We go to church.
Mm-hmm.
We volunteer. Mm-hmm. We try to be good people.
We check all the boxes.
Right. But are we truly living in a way
mm-hmm.
that reflects God's heart for justice and righteousness?
That's the question, isn't it?
It is. Or are we just checking boxes?
It's a question we all need to wrestle with.
We do.
You know, what experiences shake us out of our routines
mm-hmm.
and force us to confront the truth about ourselves and our relationship with God?
Yeah.
What are those lions and storms in our own lives?
I think it's really easy to get comfortable. You know,
yeah.
to surround ourselves with people who agree with us,
right.
avoid difficult conversations.
Mm.
We create this little bubble where everything seems fine.
Yeah.
But are we really living out our faith in a way that makes a difference in the world?
Dr. Yates really emphasized that true faith isn't about comfort or convenience.
Okay.
It's about aligning our lives with God's will.
Even when it's hard.
Even when it's hard, even when it requires sacrifice.
It's about recognizing that God isn't just watching from a distance.
Right.
He's actively involved in our world.
He's in the thick of it.
Yeah, and he deeply cares about how we treat each other.
He sees those who are marginalized, those mm-hmm. who are suffering,
mm-hmm.
and he calls us to act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with him.
Okay.
Remember those metaphors we talked about?
The war and lie.
Thundering storm.
Those are powerful images, you know?
It's yeah.
Like God is trying to get our attention, to shake us out of our complacency.
Okay.
And remind us that he is a force to be reckoned with.
Think about the things that roar or thunder in your life.
Yeah.
Are there warning signs you're ignoring?
Mm.
Maybe it's that nagging feeling you get
mm-hmm.
when you scroll past a social injustice.
Right. Or the pain you feel when you see someone being treated unfairly.
Okay.
Or maybe it's a personal crisis that forces you to confront your own mortality.
Those are the kinds of things that can shake us to our core.
Right.
And that's where the beauty of the prophetic message comes in.
What do you mean?
Well, it's not about condemnation. Right. It's about waking us up to the reality of who God is,
right,
what he desires for us.
It's a call to live authentically.
Yeah.
To bridge that gap between our beliefs and our behavior.
To close that gap between our Sunday morning selves and our Monday morning selves.
Right. It's an invitation to move beyond empty rituals.
Right.
And embrace a faith that transforms us from the inside out.
It's a reminder that we serve a God who is powerful,
mm-hmm,
who is just, and who calls us to live lives that reflect his character.
Dr. Yee, it's really highlighted that Amos wasn't just focused on the Israelites' actions.
Right.
He was trying to get them to see the heart of the matter,
mm,
the root of their problem.
And what was that?
Well, they had reduced God to a transactional deity.
Huh.
Someone they could appease with sacrifices and offerings.
Like a cosmic vending machine.
Yeah, exactly.
Put in your good deeds and out pops a blessing.
Right. But Amos was reminding them that God is so much bigger,
mm-hmm,
so much more powerful and demanding than that.
He was trying to help them see that God is not some distant passive observer. He is a force of nature,
mm-hmm,
a roaring lion, a thundering storm.
He's not someone to be messed with.
He is a God who demands justice and righteousness,
right,
not just empty rituals.
And that's a message that transcends time and culture.
It does.
It's a challenge to every generation to examine their own hearts,
mm-hmm,
and ensure that their lives reflect the values they claim to hold.
What I find so inspiring about Amos is that he didn't just sit back and criticize.
Right.
He was willing to put himself on the line,
yeah,
to travel to a foreign land and deliver a message that he knew wouldn't be well received.
It takes a lot of courage to do that.
Absolutely.
To step into a situation where his words were likely to be met with hostility,
mm-hmm,
even violence.
He was a man of conviction.
He was, but he did it anyway because he believed in the power of truth.
Right.
In the urgency of God's message.
It's a reminder that following God often requires us to step outside of our comfort zones.
To speak up for what's right,
mm-hmm,
even when it's unpopular, even when it costs us something.
It's about letting our faith inform our actions, even when it's hard.
And that's a challenge that resonates just as powerfully today as it did in Amos's time.
Absolutely.
We're all called to be prophets in our own way.
In our own spheres of influence.
Right. To speak truth to power.
To challenge injustice.
To live out our faith in a way that makes a difference in the world.
It's easy to look at the Israelites and think, wow, how could they be so blind to their own hypocrisy?
Oh, yeah. I've totally been there.
But we have to remember that we're all susceptible to those same temptations,
right,
those same blind spots.
Mm-hmm.
It's human nature to rationalize our behavior,
yeah,
to justify our shortcomings.
To convince ourselves that we're not as bad as those other people.
Exactly.
But the prophetic message challenges us to look beyond those convenient excuses.
Right.
And confront the truth about ourselves.
It's about acknowledging our own capacity for hypocrisy,
mm-hmm,
for self-deception,
right,
for straying from the path of righteousness.
It's about being willing to ask those tough questions,
mm-hmm,
to examine our motivations, and to make sure our lives are truly aligned with God's will.
And that's not always a comfortable process.
No, it's not.
It can be painful, even disorienting.
Yeah.
But it's also an incredible opportunity for growth.
Okay.
For transformation.
Right.
For a deeper and more authentic relationship with God.
And we have to remember that God is patient with us, right?
No, absolutely.
He's not waiting to pounce on us when we mess up.
He's
gently calling us back to himself.
Offering us a path to restoration and reconciliation.
One of the things that stands out to me about the book of Amos,
okay,
is that it's not just a collection of sermons or pronouncements.
Mm-hmm.
It's a story.
It's a narrative that unfolds over time.
Exactly. It's a journey.
A journey that takes us from complacency to confrontation, from judgment to hope.
It reminds us that God is working in our lives.
He is.
Even when we're resistant.
Even when we're running in the wrong direction.
Even when we're totally off track.
He doesn't give up on us.
He doesn't.
He's patiently drawing us back to himself,
mm-hmm,
inviting us to participate in his plan for healing and restoration.
And I love how Dr. Yates emphasized that Amos's message wasn't just about doom and gloom.
Right.
He was pointing toward a future where things could be different,
mm-hmm,
where justice and righteousness could prevail.
That's the beauty of the prophetic message, isn't it?
It is. It's not just about condemnation.
Mm-hmm.
It's about hope.
It's about reminding us that even in the midst of brokenness and despair,
right,
God is still at work, still offering us the possibility of a better future.
It's about clinging to that hope, even when things seem dark,
mm-hmm,
even when the path ahead is uncertain.
Right.
It's about believing that transformation is possible.
That redemption is available.
Yeah, that God's love can heal even the deepest wounds.
It's a reminder that we're not alone in this journey.
We're not.
God is with us every step of the way.
He is.
Guiding us, strengthening us, and leading us toward that future of hope and healing.
That's good stuff.
It is.
You know, as we reflect on Amos's message and like how the Israelites got things so wrong.
Yeah.
It's important to remember that like they weren't inherently bad people.
Right.
They just got caught up in a system, a way of thinking that became distorted over time.
That's a really important point.
Yeah.
It's easy to judge them from our modern perspective.
Right.
But they were products of their culture and upbringing.
Okay.
Their religious and social systems. They had inherited this way of relating to what that had become so transactional.
Right.
Focused on outward rituals rather than inner transformation.
They had lost sight of the heart of the covenant, the essential link between faith and actually living it out ethically.
Right. It's like those Instagram influencers who post inspirational quotes.
Oh, totally.
But are caught up in scandals behind the scenes.
Right. Talking the talk, but not walking the walk.
Exactly. And it's a trap anyone can fall into in any society or religious tradition.
Oh, yeah.
We become so fixated on the forms of our faith.
Right.
That we miss the substance.
The power it has to change us from the inside out.
Exactly.
Like we build these elaborate systems of belief and practice.
Yeah.
And then we get trapped inside.
Right. We get stuck in the cage.
We're more worried about keeping up appearances than actually live by the values those beliefs are supposed to represent.
We're so busy decorating the cage that we forget we're meant to fly.
That's such a good analogy.
And that's why the prophetic voice is so essential.
What do you mean?
Well, it's that voice that challenges our assumptions, shakes up our routines, and calls us back to what truly matters.
It's like a good friend who isn't afraid to tell you you've got spinach in your teeth.
Exactly.
That might be embarrassing at first.
Yeah.
But you're grateful for their honesty in the long run.
Right. And that's what Amos was doing. He was reminding the Israelites that God can't be confined to their systems and rituals and carefully crafted theologies.
Right.
He's bigger than that.
Right.
Wilder, untamable.
He wants more than empty gestures.
He does. He wants a genuine relationship.
Okay.
One that changes us deeply and then spills out into our communities and the world around us.
So it's not just about like our personal piety.
No, it's about letting that faith transform every aspect of our lives.
Okay.
Our relationships, our work, our engagement with the world.
It's about making a difference.
Exactly.
Not just like checking boxes on a Sunday morning.
Right.
So as we finish up this deep dive at Amos, I want to leave you with this challenge.
Okay, I'm listening.
Don't settle for a comfortable, watered-down faith.
Yeah, don't let your religious practice become just a bunch of empty rituals that mask a lack of real change.
Embrace those lions and storms that come your way.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah.
Let them shake you out of your complacency, challenge your assumptions, and lead you to a deeper understanding of God and who you're meant to be.
Those difficult moments, those disruptions are often the things that push us to grow.
They refine us. They shape us.
They do.
They help us become more like the people God created us to be.
Let your faith guide your actions.
Speak up for what's right.
Yes. Love your neighbor in radical, tangible ways.
Be a force for healing and peace.
Yes.
In a world that so desperately needs it.
And remember, even when you stumble, even when you fall short, God's grace is there for you.
He's not hitting spar.
He's patiently waiting for you to turn back to him.
To realign your heart with his Thomas and to embrace the fullness of life he has in store for you.
So go out there, take an honest look at your own life and let that roaring lion, that thundering storm, guide you on the path toward real lasting transformation.
That's the beauty of this journey with God.
It is.
It's wild and unpredictable. But it's always leading us towards something more, something deeper, something truly life-changing.
And that's what we all want, right?
Yeah, I think
to live a life that matters.
To leave the world a little bit better than we found it.
I think Amos would be proud.
I think he would too.